All right, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Free For All right here on Grumblings Media. Catch all of our great content at grumblingsmedia.com. And for this edition of Free For All, as always, I am joined by my co-host, Hody Johns. That's that handsome devil right down there on your screens. And Hody, we've got a great show tonight because we've got a couple of very important guests that we have tonight. Do you want to introduce the gentlemen who are with us tonight?
When it comes to the heaviest hitters in the Libertarian Party, we got number one and number two. I don't want to say what orders, but their titles might give it away here. Yeah. But yeah, we got the chair, Stephen DeKayla, and the vice chair, Paul Dar, here with us. I really appreciate it. I know you guys are busy as all get out, but I appreciate you guys making time for this.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those that are wondering, thinking that somehow we mentioned four people, but you only see three on your screen, that's because Stephen DeKayla is actually on the road, but he's decided that he couldn't miss the show. So he's on the road, but we'll be able to. He's listening to us, and he'll be able to respond to us. Stephen, keeping your eyes on the road, but how you doing tonight?
Good. I I had planned to get home a little bit sooner, but things didn't work out that way. We had a walk-in cooler go down, so the company I had come out said, yeah, we can get the parts shipped from the warehouse. It'll be there by Monday or Tuesday. I said, this is a walk-in cooler.
Right.
I'll go pick the parts up myself. So right. We got the freezer door propped open. But I made a little bit of a long round trip today. I don't know if the audience knows, but Key West is closer to Havana than it is to Miami. So I'm kind of in the United States, but I'm kind of not. And so I'm just making my way back here. But I'll probably be home by the time the show's over. But I'm listening. I'm safe.
That's okay. Thanks, Stephen. And for those out there that think who are used to or accustomed to the Uniparty being out of touch with the common man in this country, the head of the Libertarian National Committee is taking care of business, quite literally, both in his life and also for the party. Also, as Hody mentioned, joining us, Mr. Paul Dar, the recently elected vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee. Paul, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. Had the call earlier, just in case Stephen was not able to make it on, but glad to also join him here.
Yeah, and you know what? Hody and I are lucky because, like we said, now we've got the entire leadership on the show. So for anyone out there who has any questions whatsoever for either Stephen or Paul as regards the goings-on of the Libertarian Party, Libertarian National Committee, any of the hot-button issues, which we'll talk about, or just issues regarding liberty in general in society in America these days, please feel free to hit us up. We're on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook. Just hit us up in the chat. We'll see everything right here. And as if to just make that come true, Archie Fowler says, hi, folks. Okay. Hi, Archie. Hope you're enjoying the show so far. And hopefully we'll have a couple of other folks join us. Okay, let's start off with some of the issues that's going on. Let's start out with what is probably some of the more contentious stuff. So, Stephen and Paul, let's start out with – let's work backwards with the what's getting libertarians at each other's throats in recent days. And one of the things that has been catching Twitter a lot was the social media goings-on of Bryce Lipscomb. He announced that he had been appointed to handle the social media for the LP National, as far as I know, specifically on X, perhaps on everything. And there was a lot of, as libertarians are wont to do, there was a lot of back and forth about Bryce being put into that position. Stephen or Paul, do you want to, before we get into any specific anything or other, do you guys want to address how this came to be with Bryce being offered that position, I guess?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I could touch on that. The flavor of the week of libertarian conversation does change often.
Sure.
And I know Bryce being on the social media team for a very brief stint was certainly one of those things. So it's kind of an interesting scenario. I first learned about Bryce a while back. And not in good context. He actually went after me on social media, but who hasn't at one point or another?
Right.
And, you know, there was some messages shot my way and, you know, some stuff back. And then one day he kind of turned around and he posted, "Hey, man, you know, I think I was wrong about you. You know, I've been seeing what you're posting. I agree. You know, I apologize, made a public apology, and I basically, you know, said, "Hey, look, man, you know, if you're ever around, I'd love to have a conversation IRL." And
right.
So we had our LNC meeting last weekend in Grand Rapids, which was a great time, by the way. We had a really, really great Saturday night event, and Larry Sharp was there, and Justin Amash, and a whole bunch of libertarians from all over Michigan, and people from South Carolina, and Ohio, and California, and everywhere. I mean, it was actually a real, it was a pretty cool little, you know, get together of folks, right?
Yeah, it was a
pretty cool event. Anyway, so I reached out to Bryce and I said, "Hey, man, you know, we're doing this thing on the weekend. If you want to come by, you know, I didn't realize you're in Michigan. Feel free to come by." So we sat down for a little bit and we talked. And the guy is genuinely smart guy. He, you know, we had some good conversations. You know, he seemed very sincere. He's clearly smart, and we had conversations about, you know, meeting libertarians where they're at. And he had some good, really good ideas about that. If you're going to a black church and you're talking about Black Wall Street and bringing back Black Wall Street through the free market or whatever the case is, if you're just hampered down by inflation and your electric bill is high, explaining,
right,
you know, the free market in energy or in waste management, whatever, you know, so we had a good philosophical discussion there. And so I said, "Hey, you know, you obviously know what you're doing with social media. Do you want to make some posts on X?" And he said, "Yes." So, you know, I introduced him to our PR guy. I said, "Yeah, you know, on boredom, let's give it a spin." And obviously, shortly thereafter, I had a cacophony of messages letting me know that, hey, you know, this guy Bryce has started beef with other people in the party before, and it goes back many, many months and maybe years, and this and that. And so, you know, I talked to some LNC members that I talked to Bryce, and you know, we made the mutual decision to part ways. But ultimately, you know, it was, at the end of the day, it's always my decision. So you know, that's pretty much where things left off. And you know, I to Bryce's credit, he did reach over 500,000 interactions in the first 24 hours, so he did go hard. But you know, the thing about social media and X, quite frankly, is that a lot of people build up a lot of clout on X or whatever, you know, simply through causing controversy. And I think, unfortunately, Bryce was one of those guys. I mean, that's how he approached me originally, so I'm not surprised.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you something. The libertarian movement is so ethereally online that a lot of our interactions, unfortunately, are just not above board. And that's something I've noticed. I really haven't been on X until about 3 months ago. You know, prior to that, I mean, I got Facebook and whatever have you. But I've mostly worked – I mean, I've been in the libertarian movement since 2014. And the majority of the time, you know, I've met people in person, face-to-face. So when I became chair of the party, it was kind of interesting because not a lot of people really knew about me or who I was or – whatever, because a lot of the party and a lot of the movement is on social media. And so, you know, that juxtaposition of being online versus getting a group of people together in Michigan in person, and, you know, even LNC members that you think wouldn't get along or getting along or whatever the dynamic is, all that stuff has to happen in person. And so I just wish more people use their powers for good instead of evil, I guess, when it comes to interacting with each other on social media. But but yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty much where the weekend went. And you know, it's it is what it is. Maybe I should have vetted him better, certainly. But you know, we've got a lot of people on our social media teams, and you know, a lot of the people on the day-to-day, it's a pretty diverse group, and sometimes you got to take that into account when trying to build up the team chemistry, so to speak, and you know, set the right message for the party. It's a hard goal, but I think we typically strike that balance pretty well.
Yeah, and I appreciate you answering that as fully as you did, because while you were talking, Stephen, a whole bunch of messages are popping up from the audience already. Let me, and I guess this is to both you and Paul. Before we get to the question specifically, let me just ask you generally, how does it work with the social media teams, Steve and Paul? Is it that you guys sort of are you sort of like I'll use one of my favorite genres of storytelling, pro wrestling, right? When a pro wrestler cuts an interview, in the old days they would give them two or three bullet points and the rest was all pro wrestler, right? Ric Flair would get on there, he had two or three points he wanted to hit, the city he was wrestling in, his opponent, and the rest was all improv. Is it something similar with the social media team where, say, you, Paul, the LNC, will say, okay, here's the messaging we want to get out, but the details of it we leave to the people we've put in that position. We're going to treat them like adults until they give us reason not to treat them like adults. Or do you guys specifically lay out specific messaging and then you turn it over for execution more directly to the team?
Paul, do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
You can go ahead first on that, since.
Okay. So I've been on the LNC since 2016, and I'm trying to remember exactly what led up to this, but back in, I want to say 2016 or 2017, around there, I was still a freshman, alternate on the board. I might have been Region 2 rep. I'm pretty sure I was still fresh. We had an incident, I think it was over Easter weekend, where somebody decided that the big issue of the week was religion. And they wanted to make that point by some quote about the Church of Satan or something or another. I don't remember what it was over Easter weekend. I maybe it was on Twitter or Facebook or something like that. I don't remember. But I remember at the time there was no clear hierarchy or structure to the management of social media. So I created this social media review committee, and we got on there and we interviewed, hey, who's actually in charge of this team or that team? Is there even anybody in charge? And long story short was, no, nobody was really in charge. Everybody was kind of thrown in, and, you know, we basically had to figure out who was going to be in charge and, you know, how did, you know, X or Twitter at the time, when you respond, you know, does it go through APRC? You really can't have APRC review Twitter stuff because it kind of defeats the point of Twitter a lot of the time. So it brought up a lot of information about just really how our social media was just thrown together. You know, you fast forward to today, and, you know, we've had when I took over as charity, well, prior to that, I guess, I got to really know Brian McWilliams, who's been on for a few years now. Brian is actually, for those that don't know, our PR guy. He works as a contractor for the Libertarian National Committee, and the guy's got like something like 15 or 20 years experience, something like that, in the business. So he's a really sharp, really smart guy. Typically, he helps me with figuring out, you know, he kind of manages our social media, not necessarily as just him, but he sort of figures out, you know, the teams and stuff like that. If I've got, you know, something I want to put out on social media for a press release, whatever, he puts it together. And typically he comes to me every day. Like, for instance, yesterday I was in a group text with him and Alex Vidal, who's another social media guy who was actually contracted by the party as of about a month ago. And he helps create content. And so we were workshopping a press release that I was putting out on the COVID side effects that were being delayed to be released to the public under the Biden administration, that was recently released under report by Congressman Johnson and his committee and the Senate or whatever. So, you know, there's a lot more professionalism now, believe it or not, than there was 10 years ago. As far as who's on the teams and how do they get selected, I would be honest with you. I mean, there's people that are on a lot of these teams that I don't even necessarily know their names because I've never asked, or I can kind of see, like, if I go in, you know, who's a dealt, but I don't really know much about them. But they're contributing and it's not a problem. And, there are, you know, certain systems in place to make sure that, you know, people aren't volatile or whatever. And I think ultimately it's my job to say, hey, you know, I didn't like that. This person's got to go, or we got to retract that or whatever the case is. And, you know, occasionally we'll make a mistake, but I think if you look at the percentage of mistakes to good content ratio, it's pretty high. I mean, it's, you know, it's not like every week is a bad tweet or anything like that. Or,
right.
You know, we try to hit the mark. So I do think things are much, much better, more professional now than they were. Certainly in the past, I mean, and ultimately my goal with our messaging, you know, I mean, obviously if we had an unlimited amount of funds, I would love to just have a full-time professional and volunteer team that just makes content all day. Now, we do have a part-time team of professionals and a bunch of dedicated volunteers, and, you know, the chemistry of the group has been pretty solid. We always try to stay on platform. That's another one of the things. And, you know, if you want to talk later a little bit about, you know, public-facing messaging for me and what kind of what goes into that, I think we actually talked about it a little bit last time. But,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those nebulous things because, you know, to do social media right, you can't be too constrained.
Right.
But in order not to be too constrained, you can also make mistakes. So, you
right.
know, there's going to be mistakes sometimes, but I think that the messaging right now, I think, has been mostly positive from all sides of the party that I've spoken to, but I guess we'll see in the comments if that's accurate or not.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring up some of the comments real quick. We don't have to address each one, but I just want to give you a flavor of what's going on. Archie Fowler, who's been following us for a while, he says, why was Bryce Lipscomb given the LP National Twitter keys? I think Stephen has answered that. Liberty Sentry says, Lipscomb later restated his 100% support for McArdle publicly. Susan Hogarth, Lipscomb also buys followers, which is obvious how he's done it. I guess is what that meant. Archie, while Stephen was talking, please ask Stephen why he didn't do any basic vetting of Bryce's Twitter feed. And I think Stephen has just said that he perhaps could have done a better job vetting him a little bit. Jamie Van Alstein, who I believe is a first-time commenter to the show, welcome, Jamie, says, marketing and strategy campaigns for messaging should be defined, even if the volunteers are free to create the related messages, as a bare minimum. Yeah, so I think that's what we're saying here is that, you know, and I don't know, Hody, maybe you want to throw in your perception of how the messaging has been since Stephen and Paul got to the leadership positions in the LNC a couple months ago. For me, I think it's been perfectly professional for the most part. I mean, I can't really think of anything too outrageous that came out through the LP social media handles. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a step in the right direction. I know that we had an issue with a blatantly pro-Trump guy with the social media, you know, access during the Chase campaign, and at least now we're doing something about it, right? Before, that guy was just allowed to run rampant. I mean, obviously, the big question here is, it seems obvious, right? This guy actually didn't reject MAGA until the 18th of this month, which was 4 days ago. This guy is still all in on the LPNH, LPCO. He's all in on the McArdle sellout, take the funds and run strategy. He still calls people gay. He still calls our own affiliates gay with his own account.
Right.
You know, so the obvious stuff is there, right? Like, this guy has switched opinions many, 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 many times. This is not new for him. And I want to be able to take the positives from somebody. You know, at what point do we consider, maybe this is something, Paul, you can consider, is like, because I can even expand this to like a general hiring strategy. At what point do we say like character matters or doesn't matter? This is somebody obviously with a great deal of low character here that we're dealing with when they're, I mean, he made up a lie about Chase just like a couple weeks ago. And, you know, his vice president tried to get him like replaced. And then he had like proof of it or whatever, and it was obviously bananas. And so I just wonder at what point we cross the line by saying this individual is kind of low character, but we feel they can do the job, and we'd like to have them around, versus saying like, hey, we want to kind of create a positive, high character individual environment with the LP. And I think that's something that I'm kind of waiting on. Obviously, canning this guy, or I guess mutually agreeing to go different ways, is a step in the right direction, like I said before. But, you know, I mean, obviously, Brian McWilliams is somebody I don't think I've ever interacted with once. I'm already blocked by him. You know, there are people that maybe they do a good job, but maybe we could consider if these are the right people we want as far as the culture, and not just are we getting the individual, you know, are we hitting X, Y, and Z marks. I know the LPs focus on statistics and everything, but we do need to kind of have maybe some discussion about a general culture, because that'll create something going forward, as opposed to just, oh, good, he didn't use a gay slur using our social media today. Let's chalk that up as a win kind of thing. So, yeah, Paul, I would love to hear your thoughts kind of about this as a general philosophy, or if you want to get into the specifics as well, that would be good.
Okay, so the past few months, I've been just treading water along with Steven here, trying to get everything functional that we've wanted to work on and improve there. So there's a lot of basics that we've been working on and haven't really gotten down to a few things that were farther down the line for us there. And I'm the type of person, I like to observe how things are working for a while. And not be the type of individual that comes in and just says, you must change everything immediately. I've been in those work environments where you get the new boss and that's what they do. And I didn't want to demand Steven come in and go change things immediately, or, you know, without knowing how things are working behind the scenes. So there's still been some improvements behind the scenes as far as looking at who has the keys to different accounts and making sure everything is delegated properly. I'm also what's on called the IS Committee for Information Services. So I reached over to them and are asking them to assist our social team with doing an audit of the users that are on there to make sure, you know, just basic level, anyone that's worked in a corporate environment, making sure you have a user audit to make sure you have the right people that are on the accounts, that some of them might have left as volunteers and just have been left onto an account for a while. And so making sure basic functions like that are done within the organization, so we don't have anyone that's not supposed to be there anymore. In the future, I would like, you know, I haven't spoken to Steven about some future improvements yet, but we'll talk behind the scenes. I don't really want to put pressure on him in a public spot with different ideas that I have. One idea I've been working on recently is I have access to Twitter myself, and initially that was just to unblock some users that the past administration at the LNC was very happy to block different individuals there. I can't see the whole block list, but I can see who was blocked when I look around, and individuals that wanted to be unblocked, I could unblock them with the account there. Give everybody another chance there to interact with us. And if anyone is blocked that wants to be unblocked that's listening to this podcast, please send me an email. I'll be glad to unblock you there. But I'm built up a bit of a team recently to work with me. So the volunteers don't have direct access to the Twitter account of those that are working with me here. And we're working through kind of how we want to go in the future here of those that are working with me, and I can kind of act as an editor filter there. Before it goes out, so I can make sure nothing unprofessional that doesn't represent the party it accidentally goes out, and we're working on the process there. So that I'm very early days on that for myself there, but I think that's in the future. That might be a better way to initially onboard some volunteers, to not give them direct access in the future, to first have them operate in that volunteer capacity, you know, writing out the content, putting together some of the images, and working with somebody else that can act as in an editorial position before actually hitting that publish button.
Yeah, that's actually just basic good policy, IT policy. Like you said, if for people who've worked in large corporations or even smaller corporations, that's very much a standard operating procedure. Like, you don't just hire somebody and turn over the keys to social media from day one. Okay, speaking now of messaging and other things, another bit of a kerfuffle in social media world was this motion by Bill Redpath, or two motions by Bill Redpath. Let me just, I have in my notes, I want to make sure I got it right. As regards to LP Colorado, a motion proposed censure over social media conduct, but does not include an invitation to disaffiliate. And for those out there, that indicates a less severe but still notable issue with LP Colorado's actions. A motion was also made to censure the New Hampshire affiliate over its use of social media and inviting the New Hampshire affiliate to disaffiliate from the national organization. So now, just to give a little context for those who may not be aware, LPNH and LPCO are two of the more incendiary, it might be a good word, social accounts from state affiliates. They certainly believe in engagement. I don't know if shock value or trolling is the right phrase, but certainly I think that would fit. And at the last LNC meeting, if correct me if I'm wrong, guys, that motion was not taken up. Now, is that still on target to be taken up at a later meeting? Just procedurally, for those of us that are not aware of Robert's Rules of Order or anything, is that motion set for the next meeting?
Yes, we recess till I think it's the first Sunday in June, if I'm not mistaken, which would be when we normally meet anyway. So we are going to be taking that up at the end of that meeting. I don't know how long that meeting is going to last right. for, but yeah, that's going to be that is on the agenda still.
Okay, so that's on the agenda, and as I mentioned, that was put forth by Bill Redpath. So the question I have, and again, either one of you can answer or both of you can answer this, is do you have any personal feelings over this motion? Is it a motion that you're willing to say should have been brought up? Would you have preferred, Stephen, when we had you on right after you got elected, you said your preference was to reach out to people, to talk to them, to negotiate with them, to try to get to some sort of common understanding. Is that still your preferred path? Did you support this motion, or talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. I guess I'll go first, then kick it off to Paul. I actually had him in. Paul was with me just a few days ago. We had a meeting with the Libertarian Party in New Hampshire and some folks in the comms team, as well as the chair and our guys in social media, to try to talk a little bit about, you know, what can we do to actually keep us both happy and out of trouble, if that's even possible. And, you know, I think it was a somewhat productive conversation. I think it's the first step in probably a line of dialogue we're going to have with LPNH. You know, they seem receptive. They like the idea of staying in communication, as did we. We haven't reached an impasse yet, so I think that's a good sign. This would be the second time that we're talking. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think either have a channel open for communication or you don't, and you either hit an impasse and, you know, you take different routes or you talk. And I think at least talking actually can yield a result that's hopefully a result that we can all live with. As far as LPCO, obviously I've had my my past statements regarding the chair and the situation that we've had regarding the Denver Post article and everything else. So we may be talking here in the near future. There's a possibility of having a meeting. So I'm going to see where that goes and see what comes of it. But I think, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you know, communication it typically is a lot better, I think, than a censure. I think especially, and this is just my personal feelings, the body is going to do what the body wishes to do, and I'm going to support whatever that is. But I'm just going to say, in general, if you look at my voting record on the LNC, I believe that a censure is a blunt object. You know, communication or going after individuals is a lot more surgical and I think a little bit more to the point, because it's hard to hold an affiliate accountable for something when really it's individuals in that affiliate that need to be held accountable or people you need to talk to. So, you know, it's difficult for me to believe that, you know, a censure or something along those lines isn't really a lose-lose because, and, you know, I'm trying not to get too much into debate here on something that's going to be on the table, but let's say, you know, if you go after, if a body censures another organization or another body, they're essentially, you know, affecting that whole organization, and there's some collateral damage that can occur there. Now, whether or not that's the right action, the right choice for the LNC is going to be up to the board and, you know, whatever decision we make. But it's not a clear-cut thing. There is gray, I think. There's potentially other avenues of discussion that could yield better results. You know, and ultimately the question that it comes down to is, you know, what is the LNC going to do about it? So, I mean, you know, regardless of what we do, is the underlying behavior going to change, or is the idea to distance ourselves or reaffirm a certain point? So I'm sure all those things are going to be coming up in the conversation when that motion comes up. I didn't have anything to do with it personally, but I can certainly understand the sentiments that brought it to the board.
Right. And while you were talking, Stephen, I'm not going to put them all up because there's so many comments, but a lot of comments I'm seeing in some of the viewer chats is, oh, wow, is one comment I see. And, okay, Stephen is answering the question. So let me thank you for your forthrightness, because people are reacting that they are seeing you paying attention to this to the degree that you are paying attention to it without saying one way or another what the final action will be. But there's a comment here. I'll read it out to you, Stephen, because I know you're on the road there. It says, this is from Magner DeLorne. What will be the red line to the point where Stephen would declare that, quote, communication, unquote, is no longer a viable path? So having said everything you said, Stephen, you're reaching out in good faith to the affiliates, LPNH, LPCO. You're trying to communicate. You're trying to see where common ground can be reached. Is there a red line for you? Not to use neocon language, but is there a red line for you? Like, is there something that, if it were to happen in the course of these negotiations, you would say, "Hey, guys, you just stepped over a line here. That's not cool."
You know, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, there's talks between Iran and the United States going on right now. I think this is their sixth time sitting down, and Iran says they've reached an impasse. And when you reach an impasse, you know, a couple different things can happen. Either, you know, things have to change in order to get back to the table, or the terms and conditions of the conversation to change, or leverage needs to change, or understanding needs to change. But something needs to happen to get through that impasse. I feel, at least with LPNH right now, during the conversations, it doesn't feel like we're anywhere at an impasse. I think a lot of it is going to have to be, you know, there needs to be a common understanding of the situation on both sides and a common framing of the situation before we can actually figure out what we can do to, you know, assuage some of the concerns on each side. I'm sure that no one's going to be wholly satisfied and get everything that they want on either side. And so I think just a mutual understanding is probably the best I could hope for, with, you know, some behavioral changes and assurances, is probably going to be the best outcome. So we'll see what happens there as we continue to talk. I think an impasse that would be a red line where things just escalate would be a situation where we become real enemies. And if you become enemies with a state affiliate, I mean, number one, you know, ultimately, you know, the question has to be asked, what can the LNC, you know, do about it to try to get the behavioral changes it seeks without inciting or inflaming the other side so much, which just turns into a civil war? You know, you also have to wonder, you know, can there be, you know, an agreement or an understanding reached where we can just say, okay, you know, I'm going to agree to these things, we're going to agree to this, and, you know, we may not fully come to terms, but we're going to compromise here and there, or whatever the case is. So I guess to answer your question, it really depends on how serious things get. And even if there is a red line, what happens when somebody crosses it is another question entirely. Right. You know, is it a censure? Is it disaffiliation? Is it, you know, a public call out? Is it ignoring the problem? I mean, you know, there's only so many tools in the toolbox when it comes to how do we keep states to, you know, be on message. And I think, you know, it's important for us too as of LNC to say, okay, well, you know, what is the message? And do we both agree on what the message is? And do we, you know, if we have differences of target audience, can it at least come to common understanding of what's good for the party at large and, you know, what's you know, bad for you or whatever the case is. So it's not a clean-cut conversation or a clean-cut situation. And every group's going to be a little bit different about how they, you know, how they want their messaging or whatever. But, yeah, it's one of those things. And I think, you know, I was talking to Amash about this a little bit in Grand Rapids. We're such a small party that everything becomes amplified. So if there's only, like, less than 100 people who are really the keynote people in the Libertarian Party, you know, if a couple people do something bad or do something that other people think is bad or they disagree with, it's going to blow up. Whereas the Republicans and Democrats have thousands of keynote people in their parties. Obviously, whoever the president is, they're going to cause, you know, mayhem every week because what they say or what they do is going to cause problems. But, you know, there's situations like ours where you've got messaging and other disagreements in the Republican and Democrat parties that are in many cases orders of magnitude worse than what we're dealing with. But the problem is they're so much smaller that it just kind of gets lost in the sauce and nobody really, you know, it just never really comes to light. Whereas with us, everything is under a microscope and very easily accessible. So, you know, there's that problem too. And if what Justin is saying is true, he says that overall our party is a lot more professional, and there's more polished people, I guess, you know, percentage-wise in our party distributed rather than the other two parties, which I thought was which was a good sign. But but I don't know. I hope that answers the question. I hope that
it does to a certain extent. But I want to ask Paul something. Last week, Hody and I were talking, and we said one of the issues that we have with some of the messaging that you see out of some of the affiliates, particularly LPNH and LP Colorado, it's not so much that they made a bad tweet. It's not so much that something was in poor taste, okay? It's the consistent messaging that they put out for engagement. And we all know, Korloff was, I believe, the scientist who said, like, negative attention travels 8 times faster than good attention, right? So, you know, but one of the concerns we had is, because they're so engaging, because their message amplifies so much, because it is largely negative, the general perception of the Libertarian Party is what comes out of LPNH and LP Colorado as opposed to what comes out of LP Texas, LP Louisiana, LP New York, or some of the other affiliates who perhaps offer a wider range of what we would say is the spectrum of libertarianism, right? Do you worry about that? That when someone says, are you a libertarian? I'll say yes, and they'll say, oh, so you're for letting sick kids die of cancer? And you get comments like that. Do you feel that's a concern, or do you feel it's very localized, or are Hody and I making a mountain out of a molehill on this one?
Paul, let you go first.
So last Tuesday was my first time on a conversation with a couple of key individuals involved there. So I'd previously have spoken with the newer chair of LP New Hampshire there and spoken to him on a private conversation. And I did express my concerns over that. And I shared the concerns that were expressed with me from, you know, various candidates that I've spoken to out there, that they felt they had to distance themselves from the party itself when running for local elections due to that messaging, that it was negatively impacting their candidacy. So they had to just run on their own name and unfortunately not include the Libertarian Party's name as prominently as they had wished they would be able to due to the associations that you're talking about that are often made to there, that are candidates have opponents out there that while some of these things you could say, oh, there's some nuance to this discussion that can be had here, our opponents aren't going to give us crap for nuance out there. They're going to beat us over the head and paint everything that's in the worst way it can be taken, even if that person's not associated with those comments at all. And so my point there was just pointing out how that is and hoping that I could express that across for them to understand how that's impacting people outside of their sphere of individuals there. I might have not have been the best contributor to that conversation there as we were going along. I did get a little heated and raised in volume during the conversation that we were having, and I later apologized for going so loud for a while there that the conversation was a bit intense for a while, but in the end, I didn't ruin a non-accident, fortunately. We're still able to have the conversation there. I know Steven's been talking to him longer and has been making a larger impact there, but I just wanted to get across from the what could be seen as the other side to them to understand how that was impacting others. And
I'm sorry, is that Ben Weir that you're referring to?
Yeah, I spoke with Ben Weir and Jeremy Kaufman at that time. So
okay.
Yeah, I mean, if I can just jump in here, because I think the issue here, and I can appreciate what you guys are saying. You got to be careful how you change, and I don't want to give anybody power that could be used against me. It's true about the government. It's true about the LP, right? You know, I don't want to all of a sudden be like, oh, sure, we just disaffiliate for fun or something like that, and then I find that I get disaffiliated for fun as soon as somebody else takes over, and I can respect that. But I got to say, if we think – you guys are both business people. It's something I actually was really impressed about with both of you guys, and I was grateful for that because there's some understanding. But if a McDonald's says, hey, we're not going to serve McDonald's on the menu anymore. I don't believe in McDonald's. McDonald's is actually really gay, so we're going to go ahead and put Wendy's on the menu instead at our McDonald's location. And then, hey, you know what? Instead of, like, you know, kind of keeping things clean, what's wrong with dirt? Like, you got, like, everybody just suck it up, right? Like, our place is going to be dirty, and consider that it's going to be a natural immunity, and it's good for you. And all these other McDonald's affiliates, these guys are really awful. And then we find that this is absolutely impacting our bottom line, impacting people that are going to go to our McDonald's. If they say things like, hey, listen, we have to understand an ideal world. There's not going to be many Jews or blacks who goes to our McDonald's in our ideal world. Like, that's the McDonald's that we're shooting for. And if they do this from official accounts, by posting this stuff, by being like, you guys don't know what you're bringing over here with those Jews and slaves. Those are going to kill our country, those blacks and Jews over here, from official accounts. Like, I think that it goes – I know it's kind of repeating Archie's question here. But I do have to wonder at what point – you said, like, when they become an enemy to us. Well, he's actually said, you know, that they have different goals than us. You know, that their goals are different than our goals, right? That they're fine with taking McDonald's off the menu, putting Wendy's on the menu. And I think from a business standpoint, we wouldn't tolerate it, right? Like, I just wouldn't – like, if I am running a McDonald's, there's zero tolerance. I used to work in the GOP, right? And I understand, you know, Stephen, with what you said, that there is an element of being like, hey – you know, we get away with a lot because we're so big. But at the same time, there's some things you're just never going to do. Donald Trump was never going to get dropped off of one of the ballots in exchange for Kamala Harris. That was never something that anybody would have dreamed of attempting to do. There was no situation in which a GOP affiliate would have banished, you know, their Donald Trump and then been like, we're endorsing Kamala Harris on our particular ballot in our state. And so, like, why is it that there are these different – I feel like we're walking on glass and tiptoes, and we don't want to hurt their feelings no matter how many members they lose us, no matter how much money they lose us, no matter how many elections they cost us, that it feels like we can't do anything about it. And I think with you guys, I actually trust you guys. I trust your business experience. I know I'm preaching to the choir, you know, as a somebody who runs restaurants as well myself, right? Like, I totally get it when it's like there's certain, like, I want to allow my managers to have some flexibility to respond to their area, to reach new people, to have different messages, right? Like, I understand the guy who does LP McDonald's in Louisiana is going to sound different than the guy who does, you know, LP McDonald's in Kansas, and that's great. They're different constituents that power and decentralization, absolutely get it. But there comes a point where I need to be able to call a spade, especially if they say, here's a spade and I'm playing it. I need to be like, cool, that I'm out, right? Like, or you guys are out, really, more accurately, right? That we are need to be on this page where we're being good teammates. And so I appreciate it. Archie and Aaron, both friends of mine, kisses, guys. I appreciate you both.
Steven, I hope you appreciate the great lengths to which Hody went to craft his analogy for you, constantly throwing in McDonald's, which I'm sure was a veneer that you could not see past.
Okay. Sure, but I just... When people are joining these affiliates, so they want to put – I mean, let's be honest here. Putting thousands of hours, right, like volunteer hours that they could spend doing anything else, why would I put it into something that can't just be like, oh, you think Jews and blacks should get sent back to Europe? Nah, forget you guys, right? Like at some point we've got to be able to be like, nope, that's – instant out. Our McDonald's is going to stay in McDonald's. Our LP is going to stay in LP. I'm cool with differences. I got differences too. With you guys, with everybody, it's not the end of the world. But there does come a point we got to step up and be like, sorry, there are some things we just can't be doing, right? Like for us to have a functional organization. You guys get that more than anybody. So I guess that's what I'm thinking, but I want to hear what you guys are thinking about that.
And Steven, I guess, got home, or he got pulled over, one or the other.
If you see some flashing lights behind me, start recording. I'm actually at Wendy's. I'm going to go through the drive-thru when we're done and drop off these fans, but I just got back to Key West. Hody, I think I agree with everything you just said. And, you know, I think I'm going to show my hand a little bit, which I probably shouldn't do, but I think it has to be said because I get this question a lot. You know, people come up to me and, Paul, I'm sure they come up to you and go, LP New Hampshire and Colorado, what are you doing about it? And it's like, what can I do about it? I mean, at the end of the day, the LNC really doesn't have as much authority or jurisdiction over the affiliates as most people would think. And that was by design. You know, do we withhold something? Well, what are we offering of value to the affiliates that we can withhold? Do we, you know, take something away from them? We don't really have much to take away. Do we, you know, we beat them on the head with a stick? Well, you know, a censure is a badge of honor for a lot of people who can make a career out of claiming the LNC is anti-free speech or you're picking on me and not them or, you know, whatever the case is. So do we disaffiliate? And I think that's the biggest question. At what stage do you go to disaffiliation? Well, you're going to go to a state. You're going to tell a supervisor of elections or a secretary of state that this affiliate no longer exists anymore. We're actually going to charter a new affiliate, like what JBH tried in LP New Hampshire not that long ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Well, then you're going to have, you know, lawsuits over bank accounts, over party resources, even trying to get things like Twitter keys and Facebook keys and, you know, whatever the heck else, resources and voter data and blah, 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 blah. And then guess what? In a year from now, if you don't have a majority in that affiliate, then the same people that were in charge last time are going to come in, take over, and, you know, do the same thing. And, you know, in the case of LP New Hampshire, they just won re-election. You know, they just had an election not that long ago where the majority picked the current EC of New Hampshire, and they know damn well that this is the messaging strategy they would like to see because they voted in the same people and they endorsed the same strategy. So, you know, do you censure an affiliate and just try to separate yourself from them? Well, what about people that are elected officials or running for office or are just volunteers? Well, now you've turned the moderates against you who may otherwise be willing to work with you or agree with you because you've just come down on their affiliate and, you know, maybe negatively affect a candidacy or a position or what have you. And also there's a Streisand effect to that too. Now, I completely agree the argument to just say, yeah, well, just censure them and, you know, do what you got to do. And if you have to disaffiliate, say, screw it and disaffiliate and just do what you got to do. Screw it. They've made their bed and they've got to sleep in it. You know, sure, if that's what the board would like to do, that's certainly within the board's capacity to do so. But to say it's such an easy, clean-cut thing, I think is, you know, it's missing some real potential blowback there. And also you make enemies with an affiliate for a very long time, and they're just going to double or triple down on the same thing that we didn't want them to do. So in my opinion, I really believe that, you know, the best course may be to actually work with people, see where we're at, and talk common sense and find common, actually work together and maybe agree. So I think I'm probably lagging it all over the place, but I don't know if I still hear you guys. But if you still hear me, let me know.
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear you. So I think one of the other questions is it's okay. Not just the messaging, which is a concern, right? But in the specific case of LPNH, sure. There were bylaw violations, right, where honestly, and look, if it wasn't for Karen Ann, Colorado would have gone down the same path of not placing the duly nominated ticket on the state ballot, as they were required to do, or – rather, I should say, not endorse another party's candidate and also not place another party's candidate on their ballot and on their line. Like, so leave the messaging aside for now. You and Paul are working. You're reaching out. You're communicating, which is the preferred method, I think, in all these cases. What about very, very, what I would consider serious bylaws violation when it comes to, say, the state ballot? Like, are you more apt to consider that a serious violation?
There were some states that were considering it, and they were able to, you know, be turned around. I think if a state party would have put, let's say, not Chase Oliver on the ballot and violated the libertarian bylaws, I think that we would probably have to disaffiliate regardless of the repercussions.
Okay. I don't want to spend too much more time on this because I think we've exhausted it, but I appreciate you guys being straightforward with that. Let me ask you about this. Generally speaking, what's the state of the party right now? Are we seeing any sort of turnaround? Are we still in dire – Stephen, I know there was a leaked report that wasn't probably done the way you would have preferred, but, you know, it painted a pretty bleak picture. That, you know, perhaps a year from now, if things did not turn around, there might not be an LP. Do we still feel that way, or are you starting to turn the ship around a little bit? You're starting to turn the Titanic around a little bit?
So here's where we're at, and I'll let Paul speak on it, too. I'm curious to get his opinion. But I truly, honestly feel optimistic about where we're headed as a party and where we're going. We're not there yet, but we're moving in the right direction. You know, when I first got on and Paul first got on, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of it was hitting the ground running, trying to figure out what's what, who's who, you know, in what capacity is everybody actually working together and, you know, what can they accomplish and what's our capacities and whatnot. It became very apparent very quickly that the number one thing we need to focus on is fundraising and membership. Everything else, quite frankly, just wasn't a priority. It's still not a priority. We want to be able to fund these things and work on these things and do all these things, but we need money to do so. So in the immortal words of Javier Milei, no hay plata, there is no money. That's, you know, I've pretty much been using the analogy of stop the bleed. You know, when you get into a car accident, you know, or you come up on a car accident, you get the victim or whatever, you find the arterial bleed, you throw a tourniquet on it, you get the guy to the hospital and you get him patched up, and you know, that's kind of where we're at. So I think the first step in cleaning this up has actually been in the leak report, and Debbie Mason talked about it a little bit in open session last weekend, is the technical debt we need to pay back. So for a long time, the LNC has been in a position where a lot of our data is unusable or not very cleaned up and, you know, not very categorized and, you know, whatever the case is. We've been kind of trudging through it. But we need a data cleanup. And so probably in a few weeks you'll hear a little bit more about it. But Paul and I had a meeting just recently with the data company. We're going to have another meeting with them soon. And, you know, we're looking at that for some data cleanup as well as some upending and things like that. And I think we're getting very, very close now with the relaunch of Archimedes 2.0. Where I feel very confident, if we're successful, to see a major turnaround. And it's multifaceted. You know, we hired on Perry Willis, who was a copywriter. He was also big into the data back in the 90s and 2000s with direct mail. We've graduated a long way from direct mail since then. So he's on our team. We're working on a strategy, a long-term strategy, together with some other teammates. We're working on the data side. We're working on essentially what's going to be the copy side and then the delivery side. And the whole point of Project Archimedes is to reach out to people that, you know, perhaps have lapsed in the past, or you know, the people that we know are libertarians, the people who are registered to vote in you know, the 33 states that have voter registration, which we have about 700,000, 800,000 records of. We know who these people are. And for the 27 states who we don't, we can guess. But there's so much low-hanging fruit out there. And in my chair's report, I did a little research. And I took a look at, out of the 260 million adult Americans, what percentage of them are actually registered Republican, Democrat, and Libertarian? Well, you know, the Republicans and Democrats have a pretty big pie. Libertarians around 700,000 or whatever the case is. We've got about 10,000 people active actually donating. And then I looked at, okay, what percentage of each political party's membership actually donates to a state, local, or national entity of the political party that they're affiliated with? And it's only about 0.5% to 1.5%. It's not a lot. That doesn't include PACs and candidates and things like that. Well, the Libertarian Party right now, at least, you know, as far as the national party is concerned, the state party is probably a bigger number, you know, when you combine it all together, we only represent about 0.0004%. So we have an opportunity to, I think, statistically 100x our active LNC dues-paying membership. And if we can get states signed on to a unified membership program, you know, where we're actually being able to sign them up for not just the national party, but the state party in the process, and we're going out there and doing the prospecting, and we're delivering messages to the people that need to hear it, and they're actually signing on, and they feel inspired, and the system's working, then we can hit this upward spiral where it's really a tide that raises all ships, and hopefully, you know, that is going to lead to, number one, you know, more Libertarian National Committee members, but also more state affiliate members, more candidates. That's going to fund PDR. That's going to be we need candidates to run in order to support them, right? More affiliate members, more leadership, because you know Paul and I have been in the party. He's been in for longer than I have. I've been in the party for just over 10 years. We're like the guys third shift in the back of Waffle House smoking cigarettes behind the dumpster. Well, the new blood comes in and is like excited to learn how to, you know, clean dishes or scrub tables. You know, we need more guys like that in the party. We need some more new blood. And so what happened during the original Archimedes is it brought in a lot of new blood, and we desperately need the new blood in the party. It's gonna quiet down the infighting, because there's gonna be so many new people here that don't know what the past was like. And they're gonna be excited, and they're going to be the future of this party, and they're going to have money, even if it's $5 a month. So that's really the direction I see us going. I think it's really one of those things where it's do or die. We're burning the boats. There's no turning back. I mean, quite literally, that is the tempo that I think Paul and I have taken getting into this role, is that, you know, it's either going to work or it's not. So it has to work. And we have to do everything we can in our power to make sure it does work. And so the gravity is not lost on either of us. We've been working very, very hard. I mean, I can probably speak for Paul on this. We've sacrificed a lot of our bandwidth for work, for family, for other things, to work solely on this. And, you know, that's been our primary objective. And so if I got to kick ass a little bit, the other board members, you know, cool, let's do it. But really, I want to get the board working together in the right direction. But most importantly, staff are working in the right direction. And I hope that your audience and the members listening can join us in, you know, in this march towards making the party better, and feel confident we're going to get there. But I do feel enthusiastic.
Well, that's good to hear that you feel enthusiastic. And as you were talking, just want to bring something up. You're talking about bringing people back in. Excuse me. We had this comment. Outside of the LP and HLPCO, one of the big red lines to my coming back to the party is the restoration of the anti-bigotry and abortion planks of the LP. Would you support the return of those planks into the party?
I would personally. I never had an issue with it. I was going to speak against the removal. I think it was a weird thing to remove, to be honest with you. I was out in the hallway dealing with something else interesting going on at convention at the time. For those who know, you know. But yeah, I mean, personally, I really don't see the issue with it. I don't know what problems it caused in the past that justified its removal. I don't know if people saw it as too left-wing or too soft or whatever the case is, but I don't know. I don't really understand it. Maybe somebody can enlighten me. But, yeah, I wouldn't mind it being back in. It's obviously up to the delegates at convention if they want to add that plank back in or not. Because I'm sure it's been a contentious issue for years for whatever reason. I'm not quite certain.
Let's turn that to Paul, and then I also want your feelings about the question that Steven answered, which is kind of your take on the state of the LNC as well, or the LP.
Okay. So back in Reno when they were removed, those planks, I voted against its removal. So I'm very much in favor of returning that plank there. People have asked me to promise that I'd be able to return it, and that's up to all the delegates at convention and getting them there. I can't just unilaterally throw stuff onto the platform there. If I had my way, I would have gone back to 2006 and thrown on all the old planks that were taken off back then, for those that have a memory long enough back then, because I'm one of those guys that have been in the party since 1998. And realize we've actually limited the number of planks we've had out there. So we have greatly already simplified things over time, and oftentimes that has not improved things in many situations. So I'm in favor of their return there. Some people are going to disagree with me. That's fine. But I would like them back. And as far as the state of the party, past August, we were out in Miami. We made some goals as the Libertarian Party, the LNC there. The goal is to have 2 million annual revenue by 2027, 500 libertarians run for winnable races, and to grow membership to 17,500 in 3 years, which were all goals that we've met in the past. Those were all metrics we've met in the past. My one complaint that I had back then was that we didn't really have a plan to achieve any of those goals. I think of them as wishes when you have a goal and you don't actually have a plan to achieve anything out there. I might as well be wishing for a pony and ask Herman for one there.
Paul, if you can give me a pony, I will vote for you.
As Steven was talking there, looking at modernizing something that was used in the past there. So I look as reaching out to membership as two different aspects of it there. So we need to bring in those new members. And the only way we've really done that as a party is through our candidates. And if you have a bad candidate cycle, you're not bringing in new party members during that time. And sometimes there's forces outside of the party that will make that cycle happen that way. There's just different things that happen. And we just might have, if you're thinking of sports, just a bad season. And then we're stuck rebuilding for a while there. But if with Project Archimedes retooling it for the present day, that has us bringing in people to the party constantly. So we're going to be reaching out. We're going to be bringing in people constantly. We're still going to be bringing them in once again with that goal of having the 500 candidates out there. We're going to be bringing people in through our candidates also. But we're going to have two avenues that we're going to be bringing people to the party. And then we're going to make them aware of the Libertarian Party that way and libertarianism. And once you have those people in, our other goals, we wanted to raise revenue. You need more people, you'll have more revenue. It all goes together. And when you have both of those, I have like a little spiel I do on that. I tire people out probably on it. But once you have both of those, you also get more people that are going to run for candidates. And we're going to get better candidates the more people we have. The more competition, the better marketplace of ideas we have, and the more refined our candidates will be. In addition, the better support we'll have from that base that we're providing them by getting people into the party, and they're there to support them. So right now, I've been tracking, I looked at where the party was going. Some people are saying, no, you couldn't have seen where the party was going 2 years ago. No, I looked at where the party was going 2 years ago. I saw, you could see track that membership decline, and you could see where our revenue was going to be going that entire time. And as you keep tracking it, we are where we are. And we can reverse that through different efforts within the party. So Steven and I are going to work on that plan for the future for different parts to make those goals happen. And we're already achieving that through working through the team with Project Archimedes, that'll be like the big long-term plan to make things turn around. I know some people that are even recent leadership in the party that are detractors of that. I think some of them are thinking in too old of terms sometimes there. Any company out there has marketing, and we're no different. We're gonna have marketing. This is just a very focused way that we're doing it for the party that's effective for us, and we're gonna make it happen. So there is a path forward for the party, that this growth is going to help us to do that, and that's where I see the party going in the future, and that's why I put in so much work that I do every day with Steven to make sure we can achieve that goal for the Libertarian Party. Because if we are not going to be doing this, I truly thought, I was worried the party was going to just fall apart and fail. And what do I do then? I'm not going to go out there and vote for the Republican or Democrat out there. I would have been one of those people stuck non-voter because I was not going to be voting for the duopoly out there. So that I'm here to make sure the Libertarian Party is an option in the future, and hopefully an option that is going to be 100% competitive with those future parties as we grow.
Before I give Hody the last question here, I'll give you my nerdy Greek joke. Since you're working on Project Archimedes, put up a sign over your doors that says "Mi mutus kiklus darite," which means "Leave me the hell alone. I'm working on my circles." So I'll write that out for you if you guys need that for your office doors. Hody, you got a question for the guys before we go?
Yeah, just a real brief one because I know we're kind of at time here, but I think this wouldn't take too long to answer. So I was really excited and then really disappointed with the business notes that we've kind of gathered the information we need about, Angela filtering money through her various organizations, and that it said, well, we've got the information, but we're not going to release it until the vest suit has been completed. And I got to say, just coming from the GOP, and again, maybe it's a different animal, but from the GOP, like, obviously this is something we would have solved and fixed and released the information of last year, right? So, like, I'm just trying to I know there's not a legal reason, but, like, what's the personal reason here? Like, what's the understanding that makes it so waiting for this to kind of be, I guess, finished litigating, which could take forever, that we need to withhold information from the members whose money was taken by Angela? And I'll start with you, Paul, because I was actually told they were like, I think Paul knows more about this than information than anybody. And, like, I was like, all right, I trust him because I'm just in the dark here.
Okay, so lawyers have talked to me, and there's limits on what I can say. So I'm going to start with that for you to know. So right now, just to be clear, the full report doesn't even exist because we have so much material that we're bringing together and is going through legal review. So there is an extensive amount of material that is being very carefully examined and made sure everything is proper that goes into this report. It is going to be a very extensive and well-documented report. And, some lawyer is going to come in here and choke me if I try to say too much more than that. But we're getting along there. While there's multiple issues right now, it is going to be coming out. One thing I wish we'd had, unfortunately, our funding is not at the point where I would have much preferred not spending, so many hours of my time working on this. Yeah. I would have much preferred having an outside investigator working on it because that would have saved me time. But I don't have the $40,000 to $80,000 within the party to make that happen for that sort of goal. And I had to, kind of come to that sad reality one night that was just not going to be happening and I was going to be wasting weeks of my life working on this in some ways. Okay. So those that are, angry on the amount of time that it's taking, I am doing the best that I can with the individuals that are working on this committee and with the resources we have to make sure everything is 100% when it is released.
Okay. Steven, right. Anything or did Paul nail it?
I did what Paul said. He took the words right out of my mouth.
Okay. Fair enough. All right.
All right.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
Well, guys, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I know having to carve out an hour or so to do a show sometimes is a little difficult. Steven, certainly thank you for joining us from the road. I really appreciate it. Before we sign off, Paul, do you have anything you want to announce or give out an X handle, how people can reach you, or if there's anything you want them to check out?
Oh, yes. I know a link they can go to right now. It's lp.org/DARR, D-A-R-R, donor.
Okay.
And then you can make a donation to the party, and I'll give you a nice phone call for that. There is a reason that I'm leading the whole board and donations to the party right now, and that shows support for what I am doing on the board. And I will talk to you, and you can yell at me like some people do, or you can thank me, depending on what your opinion is. I will take both, and I'm here to work for the party, and some members of the board didn't listen to you in the past, I will. So there you go. Go to lp.org/DARR donor.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Paul. Steven, if you could still hear us, is there anything you want to promote or give out?
Let me think. I would say the only thing I would say is, if you haven't done so already, go to lp.org, join the newsletter if you're not already on it. You do get a lot of exclusive content there, some nice curated press releases and things that we put out about the state of the party, what's going on. And of course, if you're already a donor, if you donated in the past year, I would encourage you to become at least a $5 a month donor. That gives us the predictability that we need to be able to go and make decisions for the future. So we can rely on your $5, $10, $20 a month, $100 a month, whatever it is. If you're a lifetime member, please consider becoming a monthly donor even at a small rate. It makes a big difference when enough people do it. And, if you have questions about the party or things are going, the way things are going, reach out to Paul or I. Feel free to use his link. You can also use mine, Stephen Donor. Doesn't matter. As long as you donate and support the LP, that's what we want to see. But I do want to beat Paul. So if you want me to beat Paul, lp.org/StephenDonor.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Thanks for that, Stephen. Thank you, Paul. And listen, everyone, we all know as libertarians, we're going to spend more time. We're going to spend 95% of our time arguing over the 5% we disagree on. So let's all get together on the 95% most of us can agree on. Let's help the party grow. Let's help the party sustain. For Hody Johns, this has been Big John right here. Free for All on Grumblings Media. Join us again next week.